Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this is a show about knowing or not knowing what you know anyway. What's it worth? What's it doing for you? We're going to find out. We're talking to an author of the Book of Not Knowing, Peter Ralston. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Peter. Well, this is some great book. I've really enjoyed reading it, chewing on it. There's so much very, very deep understandings about what we know and what we don't know and what's it all worth anyway. And to start off with, it also has to be about, it's about knowing who we are or who we aren't. And so who are you?
So
we don't know.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Well, the question, I mean, you're asking something about what the book's about, and the book's about a lot of stuff, as you know, but fundamentally what we're looking at is stuff that's just not really that useful. And most of the time we read something, I mean, you read the whole book and you probably found a lot of use in it. Unfortunately, most of the book really isn't that useful. What we're looking for when we read something is something useful, something we can use in our lives. And really, this isn't about stuff we can use in our lives.
Well, but it is a book that frees you. And it frees you from knowing the difference of what you can use and what you can't use. So in a sense, even though it's a book of not knowing, it talks about not knowing, and you go, well, what do I know anyway? And maybe you don't need to read any book.
That's true. We don't need to read any book.
Maybe we don't even have to think about any book.
Yeah. Well, the aspect that is useful is that usually we look at not knowing as a bad, as something that's to be avoided, you know, something that's looked down upon. If I don't know something, I'm bad. If I don't know something, then something's wrong. And in this consideration here, we take a look and notice that not knowing isn't a bad. It's something that's always occurring. Like, you don't know right now in this moment. I don't know right now in this moment. It's always occurring. It's always with us. It's always an inherent part of our being.
Well, maybe we need to create a distinction about that, too, because there are things that we need to know to survive.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a good point. We need to know to survive. But that's what we use our knowing for, is to survive, is to persist as a self, as a mind, as a body.
But what's wrong with survival?
Well, nobody said there's something wrong with it.
But
yeah.
No, it's just that if we're basing our knowing on survival, then we're saying, well, we don't need to know, then we might not need to survive.
That's right. Yes, we don't need to survive.
Well, that's a strong statement. And what is it based on? I know, I've read the book, so I know what you're talking about. You know, our need to survive is based on what concept?
I'm sorry?
What concept is survival? What is it based on? It's an automatic, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems to come with a package, like you and I being a self.
Right.
The whole possibility of being a self seems to depend on our ability to survive. We persist as ourselves, as a mind, as a particular self, as a me, as a body, and all of that in order to persist, in order to continue to be myself, to be my body, I have to do certain things and interact with the world in a certain way, so that I can persist, so that I can survive.
Right. So as humans, we do need to, we have an automatic to survive as humans. We just don't know what that means. So we're putting
right.
a knowing on it that has expectations about the importance of being human, and we don't know what human is other than a construct.
Right. Yeah, well, we don't generally, most of the time, we don't even consider what is it to be human. I mean, every once in a while, we sit around and think about what it is to be human. What does my life mean, et cetera? Where is it going? But most of the time, we're busy just handling stuff, yeah?
Well, I want to come back.
Driving a car.
I want to come back to what it means a little later. I like the idea that, because you talk in here a lot about who is the authentic self. Who are we really if we strip away all of these constructs that we've built around ourselves? And I think I go back all the way to when an infant pops out of the womb. They haven't learned any language yet. They don't really understand anything tactile or any shapes. There's almost no form in the world. No understanding in them outside of an immediate instinct, I guess, to get fed, and perhaps there's feelings of pain or not, and that starts to shape the world. And that's probably the most original we can become, or we can be on this planet before we start building languages and understandings of form and process.
Yeah, and it's interesting to try to imagine, you know, if we try to imagine what it would be like, the first thing we'd have to put into our imagination about what it would be like to be that one would be a whole lot of not knowing, wouldn't it?
Right, and you talk about that in the book, even doing some meditations where you try to strip away any concepts that you have.
Yeah, or at least, yes, right. Try is the operative word there.
Yeah, because you're going to build something around the trying.
Yeah, right, sure. Yeah.
There's always something. That's why I could only imagine that the first moments that we are born, that we are in our most original form, even though we are born into the mechanics of who we're here to be, and we certainly have a soul and the history of the soul. We're carrying with us, but our brains are unformed at that point in terms of recognizing what's around us.
Yeah, but then again, so you're already starting with that we have a soul, you know?
Well, yeah, I agree that we could give up that also.
Sure, sure.
Because we don't know.
Just because we're born ignorant still doesn't mean that we're conscious.
Well,
you're kind of postulating that it's a blank slate. We come out as a blank slate, and that would be very hard for us to even imagine, you know, to try to set out and experience ourselves as a blank slate.
I meant that
we could concentrate on that.
I meant the way the brain recognizes the world around us rather than our soul understanding things. And as you say, what is our soul anyway? And that might very well be a construct of some consciousness based on some perhaps meaning that is in the universe that we might or might not understand.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it have to be? You know, the very idea that we have a soul, isn't that a conceptual construct? Where does that come from?
Or that we might even have an experience of other lifetimes or in between lifetimes, and really identify with those experiences. But also, that's the way that we formed our reality in outside of that pureness of, for instance, the original birth of, coming out of the womb, where nothing has taken shape. So all of a sudden, not only is there shape, but there's past lifetimes. There's
yeah.
all this universe that we build around us. In our minds.
Yeah. But, you know, when you have experiences of past lifetimes, you're really having some kind of experience that occurs, and then you're calling it past lifetimes, right?
Well,
like when you came out as a baby and you're saying you're kind of a blank slate, there was no past lifetimes there for you, was there?
Well, there might have been, unconsciously, very likely there could have been. We don't know. See, that's, I guess, your book of not knowing is...
But then wouldn't there be lots of knowing there, you see?
Yeah,
if
that's what
I... But you're just saying it's there, but unconscious.
Right, and so, but we don't know what we don't know, so whatever is unconscious, we don't know. So we don't really know the underlying truth of reality other than the constructs we've built around it.
Right.
And so whether it be past lifetimes or our childhood or even yesterday is all some, illusion that we've created.
All of this, you see, all of the things when we start talking about, we start making up a cosmology, like what you're doing right now. See, when we start making up that there's a soul, we have past lives, there's something there, but we don't know what it is, etc., we're filling in the blank, you see? We're filling in the blank with some kind of belief system.
And for a good reason.
The belief system itself stands in the way of being open,
of being
considering what's actually true.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
considering what's true.
Right, well, let's... We don't know what's true. So all we can, because even truth is a construct, and only, there's some pure...
When we fill in the blanks, yes.
Right, but there's a pure awareness that as soon as it tries to fill in anything about what's true, starts to create illusions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't even fill in. So, what's interesting, though, is that if we can understand this, that all form around us is an agreement that we have with each other and ourselves, that it has meaning and that it has and that it has form, and then understand that we're making it all up, and the basic line here, and I think it's true probably on almost every dimension, is survival. But what is it survival for? We don't even know that. What's the meaning of it? We don't know.
Yep.
So
which is really interesting if you think about it. It's because we persist it with such a drive, and it's so important for us to survive, and we're very, very certain about that, and yet almost every one of us would have to admit we don't know what it all means.
Right, and we're
holding... We don't know why we're surviving,
but
then we make something up.
We're holding on to it because of that need to survive, yet we don't know why we're doing it or even that we've created it for that purpose.
Yeah, or what purpose it's created for.
And even happiness. Let's talk about, things that comfort and happiness and success. That's part of our world that we've built, that we can say, well, as long as you're in happiness, you're in a pure state. Tell me about that.
Okay, all right. Well, it seems that we pursue being happy. We want to have pleasurable experiences. We want to be feel good. And then when we feel good, everything is right. We feel, okay, this is good. This is the right thing. This is the way it's supposed to be, right?
And
the pure whatever. And yet, we might be confusing just accomplishing our self-survival with being happy. The happiness that we strive for is usually getting things to work out right. So, when your mind is calm, or when you've successfully handled a business transaction, or you've made $1 million, or your wife says she loves you, whatever, all these things, you say, okay, see, I'm happy because I have all these things. But why are those things making you happy? They're making you happy because your self is now validated. Your self is things are turning out well for you. You see what I'm saying?
Sure, the validation
is
survival.
Function, right, and this is a function of survival. Because we can see that we're not happy with things when they're not working out. we say we're unhappy. Oh, I'm in pain. I lost my job. My wife left me. You say, I'm unhappy. I'm miserable. But why are you miserable now? Because things aren't turning out. It's kind of the negative side of survival.
Although there are a lot of people who talk about happiness not being relative.
Right, right. So if you're happy with what you've got, so to speak, if you're happy with whatever is, then you're happy. And that's independent of whether your wife leaves you or stays, you know,
right.
Whether you got the job or not, whether your mind is calm or you're, upset.
So that's a happiness that's somewhat of a transcendental experience.
Well, yeah, we would consider it that because we usually can't find happiness in that way, right?
Right, it's hard.
You say, well,
right.
Look, it's like, how can I be happy and miserable at the same time? And I'm postulating that unless we can be happy and miserable right at the same moment, then we actually can't be happy. And that takes it into a very different thought, doesn't it?
Right, it's a very relative happiness. And what about religion and ecstasies and, so many different... I can't say emotions, impressions that we have of our beingness in either spiritual or religious modes.
Well, one of my challenges with religion is what we were talking about just a little while ago, about when we fill in the blanks. You know, I was saying, like, we don't like to sit in a space of not knowing, to allow that we really don't know what the truth is. We really don't know what life means. We don't know who or what we are. And most of the time, like I said, we're busy going about life, doing the things that we feel we need to do in order to survive and don't question it very much, but every once in a while we do. And then when we do, we always have religions and spiritualities and all sorts of books to fill in the blanks, don't we? And then once we've filled in the blanks with all these ideas about I have a soul, whatever, I'm going to heaven, I'll be reincarnated, I had past lives, etc.
Or Jesus saves me. Or Jesus saves me.
Or Jesus saves me, or whatever it is.
That's very survival.
That's right, and you feel better. And you may well feel better. You know, it might well help you, you know, be what we call happier because now you feel better. You have you feel more secure. You feel more validated and stuff like that.
Right, but it's a
it doesn't get at the truth.
Right,
anymore.
It's a construct. Right.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
And so, we're living in this world that we've made up, and that everybody's making up, and it's become a very chaotic world. Of all these people running around with different belief systems and attachments to them, because
there are a lot.
Right, because we're not ready to let it go because it's our survival. We survive because of these beliefs.
Yeah, and now we could easily survive in many ways without any religion, without any kind of that kind of belief system. We could survive without that stuff, but. There's something that can't survive without that stuff. You know, the thing that can't survive without that stuff is whatever that stuff provides us with.
Right.
Which is this kind of sense of being, of knowing the universe, you know, the sense of knowing what life is, knowing where things are going, knowing our place in the universe, that kind of stuff. Well, you know, without some kind of knowing, without filling in the blanks, we wouldn't have that. That couldn't survive.
So
we could let go of that.
And where does it take us?
What? Where does what take us?
Not knowing.
It takes us into not knowing. It actually gives us a place of openness. Since when you don't know, say, imagine this. Say you want to know anything. You want to know the truth. You want to investigate something, just starting wherever you are. If you know what the answer is, like say you want to experience who you are or what you are, and you know what the answer, I am a soul, I am a blue soul, whatever, and you start with I know that, and then you set out, what are you going to do? You're going to set out to experience that. You're going to sit around, you're going to think about it, you're going to try to find it, you're going to try to experience yourself as a soul. So say you're not a soul, or maybe you are a soul and it's completely inconceivable to you, then there's no possibility of you experiencing yourself truthfully, actually, without not knowing, unless you enter into, unless you allow that you really, really, honest to God, don't know. You can't really ask any question. No question arises from a place of knowing. Blanks are already filled in.
Let me take this to a level that you've experienced that I really enjoyed reading about. Because if you don't know, then how can you know pain?
And how can you know pain?
Yeah, in other words, pain is something we know. Because,
right.
You know, but you took yes. that to the level where you went to the dentist and had some really serious, very painful work done on your mouth and your teeth, and you decided you weren't going to know pain.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit different. That we're not. It's not just about not knowing pain. It's about actually knowing what pain is, then disappears, so to speak.
Right, disappears because you put it into not knowing.
Well, yeah. Something like that.
Right.
It's like pain already doesn't actually exist.
Right. And so we can only know pain.
Pain already doesn't,
right.
doesn't actually exist, then it's not existing, is it?
Right. We can know pain, but if you say that pain is only a construct that we've created for our survival,
mm-hmm.
then...
Yeah, sure. Of course it is, yes.
Right. And so then how can we operate without it? And you actually went through that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was fascinating. And yet... You know, you do say in the book that it doesn't mean that you don't have any pain in your life. It's just that you can work into a place where you can know the distinction.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure. And then knowing what pain is provides a different relationship to the appearance of pain. You know, it's a little bit like, if you know, you ever seen a good hologram?
Yes.
You know, I mean, it looks really real. You know, it looks like
yes.
there's an object there. And yet it's not. It's just light. But if you, just using that as an analogy, you know, if you know that you experience that the object isn't actually there like a mass, it's there like light, you relate to it differently, even though it looks exactly the same. So it is like with pain or something like that. It may appear exactly the same as a perception, but you relate to it differently because you know what it is.
Well, I want to use that as a metaphor.
Okay.
In terms
well,
of,
it was a
of,
metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to, but I want to continue that as a metaphor.
Okay. Right.
In terms of what else is in our life.
Uh-huh.
And what else can we look at and realize how we've built stories around it, structures that seem immutable. But life, what you're saying in the book is life is totally mutable because
yeah,
it's
sure.
all a construct.
Sure. And a lot of where I'm going in the book is towards an absolute truth or an absolute understanding. But most of the time, people often will get caught up in searching for something absolute and ignore what's right in front of them. You know, the kind of very mundane things like, well, pain, you know, or my life, you know, what's happening in my life right now? What am I experiencing right now? And you're, I think, suggesting that changing our relationship to something, to realize that the thoughts I'm having right now, say about my wife or my dog or something, well, I don't know about my dog, but anyway, aren't necessary, you know?
That's
the
point.
I don't actually have to have these thoughts. They're not even true. There's something that I'm doing. It's an activity that I'm making up. And all of a sudden, if we really get that, which can be a big get, and even it seems quite mundane, you know, it's quite just right here, but we get that, and we no longer have to have those thoughts. We don't have to be stuck in that same place. We're freed from that. What do we get? We get whatever's next, you see?
Right.
But we're freed from that. And that can be very empowering.
We're freed from all our self-limitations. that we've imposed on ourselves for survival.
Well, that one, you know, one at a time, you know.
Right. You know? Well, yeah.
If you start trying all self-limitations at once, you're probably going to.
No, I meant it as we go along, just to look at it and to see, you know, what I've attached to it. How much of my identity is attached, how my need to survive is attached, and to understand that we've built that, and it's all an illusion that we think we need, and yet we do have to exist in the world. But if we
persist in the world.
And well, if we can make these distinctions, then as you say, then it frees us to be open to new opportunity.
Yeah, sure. Or just, to be without that.
Right.
You know, that thought, that belief. And, you know, when we start trying to discover what we believe, a lot of the stuff that we think is true, actually most of the stuff that we think is true is actually just a belief.
Right.
When we start to investigate the matter, we start noticing that we have lots and lots and lots and lots of beliefs and lots of assumptions that we didn't even know were beliefs and assumptions. And then once we free ourselves from one belief and another belief and realize that something is just an assumption, we stand in a different place, so to speak.
And we don't
have those filling the space anymore.
We have more choice.
Well, it's open.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's open.
No, it's wonderful to see this as an opportunity to hold things with less attachment and with more mutability, so that we're not stuck and have opinions that we think we can't get rid of.
Yeah.
And
it can be very freeing just to let go of an opinion that we cherish.
Right. We've built the world around our opinions.
Yes.
And we have these survival mechanisms there.
Yeah.
And it's amazing who we can be if we let go of them. And so, you know, using that metaphor of pain, I found that very helpful to understand that. So this is
pain is a challenge though, because it's so painful.
But that's why it's a perfect metaphor. That's right, exactly. But so is changing our mind about certain things that we've been holding on to that aren't necessarily serving us.
Yeah, sure can be. Yeah, sure.
So it's the same. That's why.
But one of the tricks there, you see, is that you say it's not necessarily serving us. But usually when we have it, we think it does serve us. That's why we hold on to it.
Exactly.
We think it is us.
Right.
We confuse it with ourselves, and we cling to it very ferociously.
Right. So the whole idea is, I guess, to not get stuck in you know, right now, for instance, the world looks like it's in chaos, and, you know, we're holding on to the economy or the politics or the, you know, society in certain ways. And those are all places that we have really no idea what it all means and where it's all going. We're trying to put meaning on it, and those are all constructs.
That's true.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for writing this wonderful book. I I can't tell you how many pages I earmarked, dozens and dozens, that I felt were so valuable. I think it's a wonderful book for people to read, to climb through, and it really helps you know yourself in a way that's not knowing.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, the readability is definitely something that we have to acknowledge. I have to acknowledge my wife for, because she's. She's the one who actually speaks English.
Well, it's very readable, and I enjoyed reading it so much. And how can people locate you?
Oh, well, my name is Peter Ralston, R-A-L-S-T-O-N, and they could just go to peterralston.com.
Oh, good. That makes it easy.
That does.
And your wonderful book is called The Book of Not Knowing, and exploring the true nature of self, mind, and consciousness. So this has been a wonderful opportunity for me to talk with you, and I loved your book, and thank you so much for writing it and for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Okay, well, thank you, Peter.
Right. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART River.org. And thank you so much for listening.